day or good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for tuning in. Wherever you are, it is good to have you with us. My name is Henrik Palmgren. I'm from Sweden, and we bring you interesting and important topics that the mainstream media refuse to touch. We think that you deserve to know not only the other side, but the truth as well. We speak with a lot of different researchers and people on this program. Some we agree with, some we don't agree with, but we enjoy putting the ill wisdom of our times and our misleaders in perspective and question where we are today and why things are the way they are in such a horrible state. Well, you can find more at redicecreations.com and redicecreations.net. There's been just so much with the Copenhagen story here lately to keep up with, and we'll cover that here soon. We have some important analysis and perspectives to bring you on that story as well, so stay tuned for that. But today here we are going to continue with the vaccine issue with John Rappaport, investigative journalist and author from NoMoreFakeNews.com. He has worked as an investigative reporter for 30 years, writing articles on politics, medicine, and health. He's delivered lectures and seminars on global politics, health, logic, and the creative power to audiences around the world. And by the way, don't forget to check out the shows we've done with John Rappaport on the CDC fraud. And this particular story, we have a couple in the archives now that really sets the backdrop to what we'll be talking about here today. But we'll begin to talk about the recent measles outbreak right here in the beginning. John, we're glad to have you back again with us. Thank you so much for returning. It's always a pleasure having you here.
It's great to be here. Always terrific.
Very, very good. This vaccine story just won't go away. It's from different angles, of course. It keeps kind of rolling on, and the anti-vaccination fanatics continue to push and push to try to make it not only in their eyes a legitimate issue, but I think mandatory here sometime down the road. And of course, now most recently, as kind of a continuation really to the last few shows we've done with you, John, we've had this measles outbreak and the Disneyland connection. And it's just one story after another in regards to the vaccination story, isn't there, John?
Yes. In the case of Disneyland, of course, it seems more than just coincidental that, you know, we're going to take the happiest place in America, you know, as they characterize it, that sort of thing, and we're going to show how sinister it really is when you've got unvaccinated children running around. It's the perfect image to plug into the American consciousness, you know, that the overwhelming, obsessive, consumerist society is, you know, the dark side of all of that, because unless everybody is vaccinated, you know, you just can't go anywhere, you can't go to these happy places anymore.
Right.
But of course, I have seen no conclusive evidence that these roughly 150 cases of measles all stemmed from Disneyland, because now they're talking about, I think the last count was about 17 states where they've had measles cases, and to try to connect all of these to Disneyland seems completely absurd. But of course they try to do that because they want to promote this idea of the outbreak, the epidemic, the spreading from a single source. Because that's what makes people afraid. Oh, this thing is like a tidal wave and it's just sweeping across the country, when really, you know, 150 cases is nothing, absolutely nothing. And spread over 17 states, I mean, it's hardly a blip on the radar. So they arbitrarily choose, and by they I mean World Health Organization, the Centers for Disease Control in the United States, and of course, pharmaceutical companies who are selling the vaccines, they choose what to promote and what not to promote. Okay, here we've got a few cases of measles. Can we hype this up into something that sounds like an epidemic, and can we use it to get people not only to take the vaccine, but to be afraid of not taking any vaccine? Because this is much wider, this propaganda program, than just getting people to take a single vaccine. The whole idea is to promote absolute compliance and to tar the parents who don't vaccinate as terrorists
yeah.
and their little kids as some kind of biowarfare weapons on the loose that are running around infecting everybody else, to make them pariahs, in other words. So, you know, mothers will say, well, you didn't vaccinate your little Jimmy. Well, we just can't associate with you because, my God, you know, could spread some horrible disease to my son and daughter. And
well, that's what the vaccines are supposed to work against, right? So even if the other kid didn't get vaccinated, then the one who did is logically protected, right?
Yeah, that's the, one of the flaws in the whole herd immunity concept, which is really ridiculous. If you've got all sorts of vaccinated people running around, then what are they afraid of?
Exactly. Yeah.
They're supposed to be protected. But, of course, we know that's not true because there have been a number of outbreaks over the years in completely vaccinated or highly vaccinated populations. And the viruses that are implanted in the vaccines themselves, the people who get these vaccines actually shed them, as they call it. So that means they can be spreading germs to whoever they come in contact with. So the whole idea of herd immunity falls apart completely, and it's absurd and ridiculous, but they keep promoting it because, as we've talked about, you and I, on many occasions, this is yet another form of collectivism. Everybody has to get this, otherwise nobody is protected.
Yeah.
Everybody has to do this. We're all in this together, and everybody has to comply and obey for the good of the group. And it's no accident, again, that this is the psychological propaganda here, because it's not just about vaccines. It's about all of society. We're all the same. We're all in this together. There's no difference between one person and another. We all have to cooperate and give up our individuality and our uniqueness and our difference and submit to this ideal of, quote, greatest good for the greatest number.
Yeah, that's right. So this is really like, I don't know, the latest Disneyland outbreak, whatever you want to call it, they call it that, but it's almost like this is the false flag attack of the medical pharmaceutical world to get people, you know, scared enough, scare them into submission, and as you said, at the same time, actually try to put such pressure on those who don't decide to vaccinate to make it into a really big issue. But ultimately, that must mean, though, that the anti-vaccine folks and good people out there talking about this have done a fairly good job, and it's actually gaining some notoriety, and therefore that's why they're seeking to cause these kind of outbreaks, frauds, and all this kind of issues, right?
You bet. The resistance to the hype and the fake science about vaccines is spreading, considerably spreading, in many different sectors of American life. And I would say, we were talking off the air, that the so-called educated class of people in America are becoming much more educated on the subject of vaccines and are realizing quietly that this is not the way they want to go. And they are opting out, which is one of the main reasons why there are now bills in state legislatures that are attempting to either mandate vaccines or severely limit the exemptions to getting vaccines, such as a personal philosophy exemption or a religious exemption. They're trying to destroy this completely in California, for example. And you see in the press, particularly on the political left, extreme mockery of people that don't want to get vaccines and outright attacks on parents who are, quote, anti-science and who have no concern for the rest of the, you know, the rest of us, the rest of the population.
Right. Yeah.
Tremendous attacks.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. I read a couple of articles here as well. You can see that they're attacking different sectors of you know, you brought up California. It was, I'm from Wired, actually. The headline was called the sickeningly low vaccination rates at Silicon Valley daycares, and they're trying to like basically say that, well, you know, these people are, they're smart, they're innovators, they are building economies, but they're completely kooky when it comes to the vaccination issues, because allegedly they're not vaccinating their kids, so they're not doing their part, and obviously they know something, others don't. Otherwise, I don't think these statistics would prove what they prove, right? And they even, other journalists, so-called journalists, are talking that this is a white privilege issue, that, oh, this is just something that rich people are involved in because they haven't seen the real troubles of these diseases and things like this, you know. So they're really on the attack right now.
Oh, yeah, you bet. They're tremendously on the attack. And from a media point of view, I think it's very important to point out that the reporters who are writing these attack stories on people who don't vaccinate, and I can't emphasize this strongly enough, these reporters know absolutely nothing themselves. They have zero knowledge. There's a very few of them who know something about the studies, say, done at the Centers for Disease Control about vaccine safety and efficacy. But even those studies come under considerable attack when you actually start to look at the key studies, which we can talk about later. But, you know, these reporters get up on their high horse, and because they know that they're supported by the Centers for Disease Control and the federal government and conventional science on vaccines, come to believe that they actually themselves know something about vaccine science.
Of course.
And they don't.
Yeah, yeah.
They know nothing. And people who watch television or read newspapers and so forth, the mainstream media, they have to understand this. You know, sickeningly low vaccination rate. Well, who put that headline together? You know,
yeah.
On what basis is it sickeningly low? It's tremendously good when you actually look at the fake science behind vaccines. So the media push has nothing to do with the truth. Neither do these horrific so-called science blogs, which are run by rank amateurs, or in some cases people who have, you know, PhDs and think that they are, you know, just the most wonderful analysts in the world, because they accept conventional science on its face. So every once in a while, I publish on my blog a statement by Marcia Angell, or Angle, MD, who was the editor of the New England Journal of Medicine for 20 years. And I don't have the quote right in front of me, but that journal, of course, is one of the most prestigious mainstream medical journals in the world. And she has examined at close range more medical studies, drug studies, reports of clinical trials of drugs, more medical literature in her 20 years than all of these scientific bloggers put together. And in the New York Review of Books several years ago, she made a statement in which she said, reluctantly, over two decades as an editor of the New England Journal, I've come to the conclusion that I can no longer trust doctors' reports, studies, published reports, you know, medical reports, especially on drugs, et cetera, et cetera. That was her conclusion. In other words, she was saying, look, the whole thing is a fake.
Yeah.
Conventional science is a fake. And coming from somebody who was one of the most important editors in the whole field of medical literature, I mean, that is incredibly damning. But the pseudoscientists pay no attention to this because they have to rely on conventional published studies in conventional science and medicine in order to bolster their attacks on people that they think of as their enemies, you know, people who are opting for natural health, who don't get vaccinated, who don't take a lot of medical drugs, who don't believe in conventional theory of how disease happens, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, exactly. This, it's really a charge. I mean, this really is the new religion. These are the new heretics, or, you know, breaking this mold of the herd, really. But, and we're going to talk more here, obviously, about the key studies later, the efficacy and why this is important. We can talk about the bigger picture first. But I wanted to ask you just a little bit more about the Disney, Disney, was it World or Land, Disneyland outbreak here, and if you've tracked what actually happened here and how they managed to kind of, I guess, hijack this in this case and try to say that this is where it began spreading from, because just as you said, more or less out in the open, that it's actually the vaccinated themselves that are spreading measles. So it's very much this kind of, it's a conspiracy of omission, of leaving out certain key data and trying to build a narrative, build a picture to influence people to go this, that, or the other way, John.
Absolutely. I'm glad you brought up omission, because that's perhaps the most important way in which the truth is buried and slanted. For example, again, we're talking about 150 cases. No deaths, right? So, you know, this is supposed to be highly dangerous. This is supposed to invoke fear. Ridiculous. So there's no ironclad evidence that these cases all stem somehow from Disneyland. There is no evidence that's been cited that these 150 cases actually came about from the natural wild measles virus, as opposed to the measles virus contained in the vaccine. And then one of the potential adverse reactions to a measles vaccine is the measles itself. That's no right. Word about this. No proof that all these 150 cases are actually measles, because, for example, if you believe conventional medical research, there's an adenovirus, which is not the measles virus, that can create the same symptoms of measles. And then where are the lab tests, and which tests were they, if any, used to confirm that all these supposed 150 cases are actually measles? So in all of those statements, what we're looking at is omission. Omission of evidence, omission of proof. We're just looking at surface statements put out by the press from agencies like the Centers for Disease Control, which are supposed to convince the public that, oh yes, we know this and we know that and we don't even need to discuss it. But because I've been studying the Centers for Disease Control for the last, it's now 25 years or so, I've seen them lie time after time after time after time. So I would accept nothing that they say on face value.
Yeah, exactly. It's just incredible when you get into the details of this. And I wanted to ask you, is there any logic to this idea that if everyone just got the vaccine, that it would work, herd immunity, as you said? I mean, would this be then removed forever, or would you have to, in their view, vaccinate every new child at a certain age to be able to keep, you know, prevent it from entering into the herd, as they call it again? Or how do they propose that this would work?
Well, they propose that everyone would have to be vaccinated now and into the future. That's, you know, that's their real program. That's what they want, despite the non-logic of the situation, because if you wiped it out, then how is a newborn child going to catch the measles from where? But this idea of everybody being vaccinated and thereby the disease being wiped out is ridiculous, because for one thing, as I say, the vaccine itself can create the disease. The virus can be passed around and shed from one person to another, the virus that is in the vaccine. And in fact, I've quoted a report, again, which I don't have in front of me, but it's based on this idea. Pregnant mothers, more and more, are being looked at as vaccine recipients. In other words, the idea is that they are going to give birth to babies who are now, who of course will be vaccinated, the mother's vaccinated, the baby's vaccinated, and we'll create a kind of synthetic world in which everyone has an immune system that has been created basically by vaccines.
Right. Yeah.
Now that is completely fallacious and impossible, because what's really happening is that you're weakening the natural immune system of people by loading them up with vaccines. And so you would now have a population, if everyone was fully vaccinated, you know, with all of these different vaccines, 15, 20, 25 of them, that would be walking around in a very weakened immune state, open to all kinds of infections that ordinarily would never even, you know, break through the surface. So what we would end up with, it reminds me of H.G. Wells' novel, The Time Machine, where the traveler goes into the future, and I think this race who lives underground called the Eloi, very weak, kind of pinkish-looking people who have no strength, no power, no will, no determination, no real intellectual force of any kind. They're just kind of flabby and can't defend themselves.
That's right.
That's where we would go if everybody in the whole society got the full range of vaccines.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. It's like a subspecies. And I always, we don't have to do the tangent right now, but when you couple this with, you know, GMOs and, you know, ubiquitous Wi-Fi in our environment and all these things, we're literally on the path of becoming a different species with, you know, genetic breakdown, disintegration, and all these issues. We would be completely dependent on the pharmaceutical industry and probably even the whole fertility industry as well on top of it, of even basic reproduction would be handled in laboratories for now. And I mean, might sound like a science fiction movie, but I mean, that's where it seems to be going right now. It's crazy. Yeah.
It is going there. There's no question about it. It's not going there, let's say, as fast as some people believe it is, but that doesn't matter, because the pharmaceutical industry and the people who really control it, they're not in a mad rush. They feel like they have all the time in the world. If they keep making progress in, you know, how they consider progress, more drugs, more vaccines, more GMOs, more pesticides, et cetera, then they feel that they're on the road to creating this synthetic population that will be so weak internally that they will be forever dependent upon big pharma and big agriculture, not to remain healthy, but to remain in a kind of twilight zone of half-life, as you say, another kind of species, not the species of humans that we know of now.
Yeah, that's right. Let's see if we can maybe return to that a little bit later. It's an interesting kind of more philosophical discussion, and again, kind of looking at the big picture here. But let's say we have some people who actually they're concerned about the recent measles outbreak. And, of course, there's always something new, isn't there? It will be something else in a few months from now that they'll be pushing. We've seen this now for years with this kind of same cyclical pattern. But, you know, you wrote a good piece on this with the 13 reasons to reject this type of the vaccination. Maybe if we have potential mothers and fathers listening who are truly concerned about this and what to do here, maybe you can tell us a little bit about why they would want to avoid this and some of the good reasons are to reject the hype, as you call it, John.
Well, I've given several of the reasons already, but let's look at the case of William Thompson, a longtime research scientist at the CDC, 15 years or so, who on August 27, 2014, released a public statement through his whistleblower lawyer, Rick Morgan, and Thompson confessed that in the year 2004, he and his colleagues at the CDC submitted a study on the MMR vaccine, which is measles, mumps, rubella. That's the way people get measles vaccine these days, in which Thompson admitted they omitted vital data from the protocol, from the study, changed the protocol of the study to make it seem as if the MMR vaccine had absolutely no connection to autism, when in fact the data strongly suggested a connection between the vaccine and autism. Now, that story has been blacked out virtually in major media, but it is true. And Thompson is not just an outsider who came in to analyze the CDC. He works at the CDC to this day, and he is a longtime researcher, and he has admitted to egregious fraud. So when parents are thinking about vaccinating the children against measles, they're thinking of the MMR vaccine, the very vaccine that Thompson admitted really proved out to have a significant connection to autism. So that's number one. Okay. In the so-called, in the year 2014, 644 cases of measles were reported in the U.S. Where is the proof that these cases all occurred in unvaccinated children?
Right. Yeah.
Let's see the evidence, because if it shows, as in, for example, about a year ago, we saw reports of a major uptick in cases of whooping cough, pertussis, in California, it turned out that many of those children had been vaccinated against pertussis. So let's take the 644 cases, and let's see the CDC try to squirm around that one. Let's see your evidence, chapter and verse, about how many of these children were actually unvaccinated versus vaccinated. Let's not just hear the glossy statements. Let's see that, right? Then you have to look at the contents of the MMR vaccine. What's in the vaccine? And before I mention specifics on that, it's very clear that in the case of the MMR vaccine and every vaccine, that proper standards of informed consent, and here I'm reading from my article, are being violated every day in the U.S. Doctors are not telling the parents of children about risks associated with vaccines or about toxic substances contained in the vaccine. Now, the lack of informed consent, and this is a legal term, that's a crime.
Right.
That is a crime. A doctor saying to a patient, oh, look, you got to get the vaccine, and I demand that you get the vaccine, or I won't treat you, or this or that. That's bordering on criminal right there, unless there is completely informed consent, which means the parents know what's going on. So, for example, just read some of these ingredients in the MMR vaccine. There are two basic MMR vaccines, MSG, formaldehyde, neomycin, which is an antibiotic, sorbitol, chick embryo cell culture, human lung fibroblasts, bovine calf serum, sucrose, and a host of other substances. Now, let me put it to you this way, as I put it in the article. Imagine a doctor telling a mother, I want to inject all these chemical and biological substances, plus others, into your young child. You don't mind, do you?
You know? Right, yeah.
Because that's what we're talking about.
Sure,
it is. And injection means that these substances, including the actual germs that are in the vaccine, are by injection bypassing normal portals of immune defense in the body that would occur in nature, in the wild, so to speak, in ordinary life, where injections are not a part of nature. in injections, you get a completely artificial situation where you get a bypassing of normal immune defenses. And so now you have young children being injected with all these substances. Wow.
Yeah.
That is something to stop you short and to consider very seriously.
Exactly. Yep. It certainly is. And, you know, there's many other reasons that, let me scroll down here a little bit too, and we can take a look at some other ones, because we do have the money issue. Let me ask you about that a little bit, because, you know, it's an interesting fact that they, of course, seems like they want to try to keep people sick, you know, and we can certainly talk about that later in that state, but you'd think that their business would be to then heal people and keep themselves, but it's really in their business to promote vaccines. The CDC's budget includes money, you know, for the purchases of vaccines as well. So what's the tie-in here, really, with the pharmaceutical industry and the financial aspect of what they get here of this?
Well, if we look at the Department of Health and Human Services, this is in the U.S., their 2015 budget, which includes the CDC. It's the page that I accessed is called the CDC Budget Overview. We see that the CDC has $4.8 billion for their immunization program, which quite definitely includes the massive purchase of vaccines to be distributed to the population. So we're now looking really at a business model, because if you have the vaccines, you have to make sure that your customers, the public, will fall in line and take the vaccines. And in order to do that, you have to promote fear. You have to talk about this outbreak, and now we have another outbreak and this epidemic. That's business. That's what you do to promote your products. Even more blatant is the fact that the CDC, as most people understand, is also a research center where they do many, many studies on vaccine safety and efficacy. So how do you put this together? I mean, how can you have a federal agency which is purchasing enormous numbers of vaccines and then ever let out a published study claiming that any of those vaccines are unsafe or ineffective? You would never have that happen, and you don't.
Right.
Talk about a conflict of interest. How can you believe any of the science coming out of the CDC when they are obligated to buy enormous numbers of vaccines and distribute them to the population? So Big Pharma, of course, is involved because vaccine manufacturers are selling billions of dollars of vaccines to the government. They have an agreement with the government of the United States and I'm sure other countries where there are no returns, let's put it that way.
Right.
It's not like, well, if you don't like the product, you can return. No. No, you got to keep it, whether you use it or not. So that's a real sweetheart deal for the pharmaceutical industry. And the CDC is basically operating as a sales, marketing, and promotion PR arm of the pharmaceutical industry when it comes to vaccines.
Yeah.
So that is extremely, extremely dense partnership. It has nothing to do with science. It has nothing to do with doctors saying you have to get vaccinated and all of that. This is just business. And later in this article, I discuss concerning the flu vaccine, something that was called a flu vaccine summit, which was really a PR conference designed to decide how to promote fear in order to get people to take the flu vaccine.
Right.
It was all about marketing, not about science.
Yeah, that's pretty incredible. You know, and there's so many instances of that too, where they, you know, we talked about it before, they scare people into submission, and it can be scenarios that are completely created in the media. There's nothing that has actually happened on the ground. It's really like, you know, wagging the dog. It's like a scenario where they pick up on things. You know, we talked about the Ebola story, of course, before as well. And that's unfortunately what happens, because people are so tied to the media, and that now is reality. It's an artificial bubble that's created, and people, when they live within it and they don't look into these things for themselves. And what are you supposed to think? I mean, in all sincerity, when there's like a central press release from government or what have you, and then virtually all the media outlets pick up on it and they report on it like it's reality. What are people supposed to think, you know?
Exactly. That's the strategy. That is exactly the strategy. Imagine that you had, and by you, I mean your listeners, suppose you controlled an agency or a business that had such remarkable PR that you could release a statement, and that statement would be immediately echoed in every major mainstream news outlet in the world within a matter of days. Do you think you could sell product behind that? Do you think you could become a billionaire behind that? You bet. And that's what we're looking at here in many instances, where these agencies release statements and then they're parroted in the media. It creates an artificial bubble, as you say, an artificial reality. And you have many people, unfortunately, who still think that the news is the news, as opposed to propaganda. So they accept these statements from their favorite media outlet, and it never occurs to them that this is just an echo of an agency with a monstrous agenda that is promoting that agenda disguised or under the guise of being a truth teller. Has nothing to do with the truth whatsoever. Nothing to do with it. And again, I have to reiterate, because I see these reporters all the time, and you've seen them too on television, who will say, this is just unacceptable that these parents are not vaccinating their children. You know?
Yeah.
And then, you know, if you were to get into a conversation with that reporter off camera and say, what do you actually know about vaccines? Tell me.
Yep.
You would again just get more parroted information from the Centers for Disease Control, from the World Health Organization and the like. You wouldn't get the reporter saying to you, well, let me describe what I've discovered in my investigation.
Yeah, right.
You would never get that, because these reporters don't investigate. Brian Williams doesn't investigate, Scott Pelley, David Muir at ABC, Wolf Blitzer at CNN, Fox News, Megyn Kelly, whatever her name is, or, you know, the BBC, Reuters, Associated Press, wherever you are in the world listening to this radio show, your major anchors do not do research. That is not part of their job.
No.
You know, they're actors. And so when they frown and they say, some parents are not following, medical dictates and what is important for our society and so on, those are the lines of the script. That's all they are. They're nothing more. But it's the actor's job to make it seem as if he knows or she knows. That's why they make the big bucks, because it seems as if they actually do know when they don't. You see a field reporter for, say, CBS on the evening news, for some ungodly reason, standing outside the Atlanta headquarters of the Centers for Disease Control talking about vaccines. And the idea, of course, is to link in the public mind, well, he's standing there outside the building, so that's pretty good, and he must know something because there's the building.
That's right.
Well, you know, as I've written before, that reporter could be in the men's room at Grand Central Station in New York City doing that, quote, field report, and it would contain, you know, exactly the same information.
Yeah, that's right. It, you know, Yeah, he looks like he knows what he's doing. He looks like he knows what he's talking about.
So. He looks like he's been in the building, right, and talked to somebody in the building.
Yeah.
And that, of course, well, that's very important. You know, he's been in the building. You know, well, I could be in the building. I could walk into the lobby and then come outside and say, well, speaking truthfully, folks, I've been inside the building, and therefore, what I have to say is far more important than if I hadn't been inside the building. And everybody would say, well, this guy is completely, you know, crazy. But that's what you're seeing when you watch this. It's a sort of it's a movie, it's a show, it has a technical adroitness and facility. The anchor says, and now for our top story tonight, we go to so-and-so at the CDC in Atlanta. And so on a, you know, barely conscious level, the viewer is thinking, boy, that's pretty good. Look, all of a sudden, I'm looking at Atlanta. I was looking at New York. Now I'm looking at Atlanta. And there's a reporter. This is pretty good. This means something. So therefore, what I'm going to hear now is probably, certainly going to be important and true.
Yeah, it's true. It's all appearance. It's all giving you that idea of they know what they're doing, right? And I wanted to ask you as well about CDC now. We talked about Julie Gerberding, right? Last time. She's not currently with the CDC. Can't recall when she quit. But I wanted to ask you about if we have the same kind of revolving door deal here between politics and, of course, the CDC. In the same way that we have Monsanto, you know, we have people going basically from the boards of you know, big pharmaceutical companies and then directly into politics or government, which then supports the continuation of the narrative to sell that. I think currently we have Thomas R. Yes. Frieden is in charge of the CDC currently. So do you know anything about him?
I don't know his bio offhand, but I would be willing to imagine that he has some experience in the pharmaceutical industry. But we do know about Julie Gerberding, and that is that after leaving as the head of the CDC, she became the president of Merck Vaccines. So we're now talking certainly about a revolving door. Right? We're talking about the fact that, you know, you work for government, an extremely important position, and then you go into industry. And she could come back. You know, she could come back to the CDC again, and she could go back into industry. The revolving door at the FDA is really notorious. You've got people circulating. You know, this is the agency that approves all medical drugs, including vaccines, as being safe and effective before they're released for public use. So they are supposed to be objective and separate from the pharmaceutical industry, but of course they're not. You've got people moving in and out of the revolving door into pharma, back to the FDA, back again, and so forth and so on. And by law now, by regulation, the pharmaceutical industry, when they are making an application for a new medical drug to be released to the public, they pay money to the FDA openly on the table, money as part of the new drug application. So really, the FDA has clients, and the clients are the pharmaceutical companies. I mean, it's all out there in the open, no question about it. Some, maybe 2 years ago, Martha Rosenberg did an explosive interview with a man named Kavanaugh, who was a reviewer of new drugs for the FDA. And he told her, in no uncertain terms, that he had been threatened. His family had been threatened at the FDA because he was basically somebody who wanted to verify that a drug was safe and effective before he would put his name to it and say that this drug should be released for public use. He was going against the grain. And it was like the mob, you know, working for the mob.
Yeah.
There were threats and veiled threats made against him and his family and his career and his job and so forth if he didn't go along with the program.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really difficult to wrap your mind around this for a lot of people, unfortunately, and they don't really get that type of information, despite the fact that there's so many people that have been talking about this. I mean, Cheryl Atkinson, Sherry Tenpenny, this is a number of people out there now speaking about these issues. And, I mean, we did address this last time, but I wonder what will it take for this to come out in some way? Because, I mean, this would be one of the biggest stories of the year. If, you know, you'd think Wolf Blitzer and, you know, Anderson Cooper and all these liars at CNN or CBS News or ABC News, MSNBC, Fox, or even some of the more newer alternative or so-called alternative news sources, but, you know, fairly recent on the scene, like Huffington Post or any of these, would pick up on this story and start saying, wait a minute, something is amiss here. But for some reason, they have complete lockdown on all these sources, and it just only is the alternative and a couple of other people that are addressing this very, very important issue.
Yes. In the case of Cheryl Atkinson, who a lot of people know, was a star investigative reporter for CBS News and also worked at CNN. Very visible, well-known reporter, sometimes filled in on television news as an anchor, I think, on the weekends and so forth, but was basically an investigative reporter, a real reporter, one of the few in the business. In 2009, at the height of the so-called swine flu pandemic, she broke a story. Actually, her story was published in October of 2009 on the CBS News website, stating that the CDC, which is responsible for counting cases of diseases, I mean, that's their job, had stopped counting swine flu cases in America in the summer of 2009, at the so-called height of the epidemic. That was bad enough, and then she found out why. Because as she wrote on the CBS News website, and as she told me in an interview, it was because almost all the blood samples from patients who were considered likely for swine flu that were sent to labs in the U.S. for testing came back with no sign of swine flu or any kind of swine or any kind of flu. So whatever the thousands of cases that the CDC was reporting at the time in the U.S., maybe 8,000, 9,000, 10,000, were immediately suspect, all of them. And the evidence was overwhelming that there was no epidemic at all and very few cases of swine flu in the U.S. Oh, that was a gigantic story. So it went up on the CBS News website. This is to give your listeners an idea of even when major media report a story of this magnitude, what happens. So Atkinson then, with the backing of at least one editor at CBS News who thought it was an extraordinary story, tried to get the story on the CBS Evening News telecast. And suddenly there was resistance after it had been published. No, we don't want to do this. We don't think so, whatever. And regardless of whatever Cheryl did, nothing worked. They could not get that story on television. Flash forward a month to November of 2009. WebMD is one of the sources on this, but it's basically a CDC story. The CDC estimates their best estimate of the total number of swine flu cases in America, 22 million.
Wow.
22 million.
Yep.
That's called doubling down. That's called, let's follow the you know, the well-worn premise of lying in propaganda. If you have trouble getting people to believe one lie, then tell a much bigger lie. That story appeared. And then nothing. No reporters anywhere at big mainstream outlets noticed the discrepancy. Discrepancy is really an understatement.
Yeah.
From almost no cases of swine flu by scientific standards to 22 million cases of swine flu. No report about that.
Mm.
No attempt to investigate that. No pressure, no anything. So even when the story breaks through in the mainstream, it really is left to us, people who report out of the mainstream and largely through the internet, to make the story and to push the story and to pound on the story and to give it more legs and to expand it and show it in a new light. And then it can become a groundswell, and then it can become enormous pressure on the public who can't ignore it because the spell is broken. The hypnotic spell of major media is broken. That's the only way this can happen as far as I'm concerned.
Did you, because I was searching a little bit for Cheryl Atkinson as we speak here, and I realized I didn't actually follow the story, Brian Williams, right, of NBC, he's caught lying on a number of issues here, just complete exaggerations. So, yeah, it was behind NBC Nightly News, and he received like a 6-month suspension here. I think it was last week, and he went from being like the 23rd most trusted person in America. Well, I don't know how that happened, but anyway, and then falling down to 835. I don't know who keeps track on that, but that's the source that it says here from Business Insider, but. Yeah, so he's been lying about all these things, that he was like riding in a helicopter in Iraq that were shot at, and that he was, you know, in Berlin the day the wall fell and meeting the Pope and all these issues. It's just complete exaggeration. It's come out now, you know?
Yeah, this gives you the other side of the picture, which is, in Brian Williams' case, we're talking about a very strange individual. On the one hand, he knows that he's supposed to be the most trusted name in news. I mean, that's part of his job, is to exude that kind of aura as an actor.
Right, yeah.
I mean, otherwise, he's not even there in that position. That's his goal all of his life. And yet, at the same time, knowing all of this, he has apparently told one gigantic whopper of a lie after another about his own life, which, you know, if you're a salesman who travels on the road and you sit around with other salesmen and you have a few shots of whiskey and you start telling tall tales, that's one thing. But a person whose very survival and job is banked on being the most trusted name in news, who's in the public spotlight all the time, risking everything, you almost believe that this guy is underneath it all some sort of adrenaline junkie who wants to live on the edge and see how far he can go without being exposed.
Yeah.
These people have strange quirks, these anchors, strange lives, and they break down. Because they know they're actors, and yet they're supposed to be, in their role, dispensing the truth. Well, the two things don't mesh right off the bat.
Right.
As they well know. And that becomes part of their problem. Let's see, I'm an actor. I have to exude the idea that I'm being completely honest and telling the truth. But at the same time, I'm an actor. There's something wrong here, you know. This is not, you know, this doesn't add up, but that's the way the game works, and so that's what I'll have to do. Well, that brings a person into all kinds of crises and troubles and attempts to escape from their life in secret, behind the scenes, to have a different kind of existence, a different kind of life, because they can't handle it, because it's a contradiction on an intellectual level, emotional level, every level. But as long as they can maintain that pose, then the latest announcement from the CDC about vaccines or drugs or the need for everyone to get vaccines, so forth and so on, they can just spool that out and spin it out as if it's coming from God. Not a problem.
Yeah.
They look at the press release, they look at the story, they look at the teleprompter, and they say, okay, here we go, act one tonight. And now from the Centers for Disease Control, new reports on the spreading measles outbreak. You know, and they don't have to think about anything except, how do I convey this in a way that's going to sell it? That's what they're doing. They're selling it.
It's just amazing. And I hope more people, you know, get it and think, okay, well, not only about this guy, of course, what else did he lie about and all that stuff, but that this is commonplace among journalists. It's, they're almost like they get these, yeah, the actors that get on these shows and stuff are like, they're megalomaniacs, they're egomaniacs. They're like, you know, they have to outdo everyone else. And in that capacity, I think they lose connection with reality too, to be honest, when they're in that world. They're like, they're in a world of illusions and just creating, making things up. And they're, I guess they believe it so much that they just get dragged into that or something, you know?
They do. I've had many contacts with reporters over the years. I've talked to them off the record about their work and so forth. And one of the obvious conclusions about these elite television anchors, for example, is their social lives. They hobnob with politicians, with big movers and shakers on Wall Street, the financial world, foundation people that have lots of money, elite social circles in New York and Washington, for example, in the United States, and capitals in other countries, media capitals, Paris, London, you know, wherever you live, think about the media, that city, which is the media capital of your country, and the elite television anchors, and they are living in that world, a very expensive world, a very social world, and they are hobnobbing with these people all the time. So they do, in fact, get drawn into that world. On one level, they consider it the source of stories, the source of articles, the source of the best possible information on what is going on in the world. On another level, they just simply consider it to be power. I'm in the power circle.
Yeah.
So am I going to rock the boat? Am I going to sit down in an editorial conference at CBS and say, tonight on the evening news, I'm going to lead with this story that the CDC actually had no idea how many, if any, cases of swine flu existed in America. And yet they went on to claim, preposterously, based on no evidence whatsoever, that there were 22 million cases. That's the biggest story of today, tomorrow, next week, next month, and we're going to lead with that tonight, come hell or high water. They're never going to say that.
No.
They know how many boats it would rock, including the boats in their social world, and how they would instantly become a pariah, and they would be fired from their job.
Yeah, that's right, exactly. And it's kind of reassuring in that way, because then we know that, like, the truth will never come from these networks. You know, it's one thing we know for sure about them, right? So.
Right, yeah, that's right.
All right. Well, John, I want to pick up here. We can take a short break here in a little bit, and then we can continue to talk more. I definitely want to get into more about how you're seeing that they're seeking to do this mandatory, then making vaccination mandatory, how they're going to try to push this, and also, of course, what we can do to resist this and then we can get further into, you know, why this is so incredibly important to stay on top of this and fight this. But as we always do, John, please give us some of the details about your website. Tell us about what you have available there, or if you have anything else upcoming or something you want to let our audience know about, John.
Well, my website is nomorefakenews.com. It's been there since 2001. And I write stories pretty much every day and publish them on the site. And people can go there and sign up for the free email list to get stories sent to them. And I also have three very large collections which people can read about and order. The Matrix Revealed, Exit from the Matrix, and Power Outside the Matrix. And these collections get much deeper into what the basis of civilization and society are, what mind control really is, how deep it goes, and how people can access their own enormous hidden reserves of energy and creative potential and imagination to literally invent their own future and reality, as opposed to accepting the reality that is painted for them by, we've been talking about media, but by many other elite groups as well. So that's what I do, and I've been doing it now for, well, working as a reporter since 1982. And what I came to see fairly quickly in the first year or two, really, of working as a reporter was that there were certain topics and subjects that were off limits, even at that time in the alternative press. There were certain things you couldn't say, certain places you couldn't go, certain questions you couldn't ask. And with the advent of the internet, suddenly, you know, it was a miracle. You could publish a story right away. You could find out the facts for yourself, and you could have an audience that was potentially global without having to go through all of the censors and all of the editors and so forth at media outlets. So that's what I do, and that's the work I do.
Very good. Yeah, exactly. It's truly, it's extraordinary. One of the greatest tools that we have at our disposal to be able to get some of the real stories out is absolutely key. So, folks, do check out nomorefakenews.com, and of course, check out the Matrix series as well. We'll have links up to that from our website as well. Okay, well, we'll take a short break here, folks. Stay with us, John. Stay with us, everybody, and we'll be right back. Folks, when we return after the break, we'll continue to talk about the bigger story behind the CDC, control of the media, fraud and lies in the media, and also our servitude to the control of the health industry. It's all coupled together. We discussed the lack of choice when it comes to the government's healthcare system. We speak about the crumbling system in Sweden as a comparison, and the lie that it's free, which nothing is. And of course, also how Obamacare will ruin what is left of the American healthcare system. We'll begin to speak about the push towards mandatory vaccination and what actually can be done for those of you who want to opt out of this. It's a very important continuation here coming up, so please don't miss it. You can go to redicemembers.com and sign up if you're not yet a member. And, of course, hear more of this program and all our previous shows in full. We have close to 1,000 programs for you on a lot of different topics that are, in my view, some of the most important and pressing issues at this time. Both things people don't dare or won't look at, but also analysis and deeper investigations into many of the lies and ways that the globalists are seeking to push their world on us. And of course, resistance is key to all of this. We have all the details for you on the website where you can hear and see a lot more, redicemembers.com. And we have more coming up with Mike King, Nick Kellstrom, John Friend, Sally Fallon, and many more. For now, we say thank you for listening, but stay with us, folks. We'll be right back. We'll talk to you after the break.